Hello and welcome to the third episode of Exiled Eagles. Today we'll be talking about our staggering run of form under Roy Hodgson, an exiled eagle goes back to Selhurst Park for the first time in 10 years, and we'll be chatting to author of The Palace Addictions 1 and 2, James Howland. Hello and welcome to the first Exiled Eagles podcast of 2018, sponsored by Top Corner Recruitment. I am back with my fellow exiles, Rob Seltzer.
Good evening.
Dale Courty.
Yay, we got it right this week.
I got it right.
Yes.
I got it right. And Mark Werner, how you doing?
Name correct and I'm well, thank you.
excellent. So we haven't had a chance to pod for a little while because we've basically all been gallivanting all over the shop, really. Personally, I've just wasted the last couple of months following around the England cricket team. One benefit was, though, I got to meet a lot of Palace fans all over the place, so that was decent. So, yeah, I just want to say a big hello to sort of all the Palace fans I caught up with over the last couple of months. It was good to meet you all. Dale, you and I, we watched the Leicester game in Perth.
We did.
We watched it in, I don't know what you called it, sort of 3D, triple vision, something like that.
On the world's biggest screen. It was amazing, wasn't it? Yeah, mind blown by that one. It was brilliant.
It was really good. And then, yeah, I sort of caught up with the Melbourne supporters group to watch the Arsenal game, which is a lot of fun. 6 a.m. in the casino there. Beers were well and truly flowing. And I've had my dad over, actually, watching the cricket with me. And he had a bit of a sort of sneak peek to watch what it's like watching Palace over here. 6 a.m. quite a few times we were down the pub. By the time it came to the Brighton game, he just had no interest whatsoever.
What did he think of it? What do you think of the 6 a.m. slots?
He was done. He was just fed up by the end. Doesn't know how we do it. So that was good fun. Dale, you've been in the US, haven't
you? Yes. So I've spent 2.5 weeks in Denver, New York, and San Francisco.
Nice. And did you manage to watch any Palace games when you were over there?
So I managed to watch two, mainly, one of which was Man City. So I woke up and was like, oh, I wonder what time the game's on, and realised that it started, so whacked it on. And yeah, brilliant. Sat there on the edge of the bed trying to keep my emotions in check. Then we win a penalty and emotions go out of the window. And then we miss a penalty and emotions continue to go out of the window. I mean, the saving grace for Carrie, my lovely girlfriend, was that we got a point against Man City, so I wasn't too grumpy whilst exploring New York.
I have to say, that Man City game, for anyone that hasn't realised, that kicked off at about 11:30 Australian time. Is that right? About 11 p.m. Australian time on New Year's Eve. So they missed the penalty at, I think, 12:15 2018, like literally 15 minutes into the new year, we managed to miss that penalty. Only Palace can ruin my year within 15 minutes. It was unbelievable.
I've got to say, I didn't get a chance to meet up with any of the supporters' clubs because it just didn't work out for us. But quite friendly times, 11 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, depending on where you are. It is. The downside is obviously it impacts on work. So, you know, you're in the old corner office, get it on, in a meeting, leave me alone. But no, it was good. Lovely to watch Palace games again at a normal time.
Yeah, I bet. And speaking of normal times, Rob, even better for you, you went back to the motherland.
I did. I was back in the motherland, so it was really weird. I got to watch the game at 3 p.m. I got to watch the game at midday. I watched the game at 7:45. I didn't go to work pissed off. It was All really weird. I mean, I went to the Arsenal game. I was there at Selhurst for the first time in almost a decade. Hasn't changed a jot. Still, like, you can still barely see the top of the stand as you're walking down the road because it's that low down. And, you know, it's still the Palace. It's still Selhurst.
And has the atmosphere changed at all since you were last there?
I'd say, yeah, because last time I was there, we were poo in the championship, so there was me, my dad, 16 other people and a ball boy, so the atmosphere was slightly different, but there's a lot more people there that are very expectant because of just the players. I mean,
yeah,
the amount of crap now I've been there, the amount of crap that Benteke takes for not chasing down a completely lost cause is ridiculous. And there's people sitting there like, Arsenal go, well, we're losing 1-0 to Arsenal. It's not That's not an uncommon thing. Exactly. Yeah. But like, there were times where it was brilliant. There were times where it was a bit blur. But I tell you what, the cheeseburger I had was pretty good.
Oh, Jesus, you're brave.
I know. Most of it ended up on the jeans as well. I only took two pairs of jeans over, so that was them done for the rest of the holiday.
And Marky Mark, how's your Christmas and New Year period? You had your the Brisbane Supporters Club Christmas party, right?
It was huge, mate. Absolutely heaving. Didn't get as far afield as the other boys on the pod or yourself over the break. I kept everything pretty close to home, and yes, we had our Christmas party, mate, up here for the Swansea game, attended by myself, and that was it. I was having a bit of a laugh at 2 and 3 a.m. on Christmas Eve with fucking cleaners going behind me and lifting my feet and all this sort of palaver. Which was Swansea 1-1, which is a game, you know, we should have got the chocolates with. So I was ruining the result and ruining complete lack of attendance by every other member apart from myself.
they've got a lot more sense than you, I would suggest.
Yeah, I would say so, mate. Yeah. So I was at full time. I was questioning my life choice at that point in time. But mate, I had to get out and represent as club pres. So you know. All good.
Yeah, well done, mate. Good effort. Very good effort. So, it is January, which means it is officially transfer window time.
No, it's not. Not until the 31st time... of January, around about 11:59 for us.
Yeah, totally. That kind of brings me on to that point of we're doing it again. Why do we always do it this way? Why are we leaving it so late? I mean, I genuinely don't know. I don't know enough about the transfer process, so it's a genuine question. Anyone can sort of enlighten me?
No, I kind of know a little bit because of kind of what I'm trying to do, but I still don't get it. I don't understand how. So we appoint Dougie Freeman September time, and everyone thinks he's just take over for De Boer when De Boer eventually, we all knew he was going to get sacked. Didn't happen. So he's now, the big thing, his remit was to pick up players, go and sign the players, talk to the players. And as been said on other podcasts and on Twitter and Facebook, and everyone's picked up on it, we're linked with Diafra Sakho, which is just agent talk. I've always said that's not happening. That's just agent talk. We're linked with him, Babacar, all these other players. And we've all been linked with these guys for the last X amount of years. I think pretty certain we're in for Babacar, and we might even get him. But what I don't understand is why it's now mid-Jan and we're still negotiating, still talking about it. Like, surely we're like, right, Hodgson gets a list, do you want to go after this guy? So Babacar, we've got the scouting network, we've been scouting, we've got all his details, we all know that stuff. If Hodgson says yes, why are we not talking to Fiorentina since October? And then we say to them, are you happy to let him go? They might say no. So we go back to them in November. Has it changed? They're like, yeah, we'll be interested. We will sell for 15 mil, let's say. January, so we're like, okay, we put the bid in, we do everything, we can get it all tied up and get talking. They might change the goalposts in December. But if we're talking to them, we know that's happening. But what it's coming across as, that I'm not involved in the club, I don't know. What it's coming across as is we haven't done anything. And all of a sudden we start talking in January. They're like, well, we want 15 mil. Oh, we'll give you 10. We want 15, but we'll give you 12. We want 15, but we'll give you 13.5. Whatever we're doing.
Yeah. And then, oops, suddenly it's midnight, too late.
Yeah, exactly. Over. And so, I mean, I think we should have had at least one across the line. I know this goalkeeper thing's really difficult because Malaga don't want him to go. And they've got some weird Getafe, that's it, sorry. And they've got some weird contract thing, whatever. But there should be considering how desperately we need a striker, I don't see any excuses to why that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, haven't got one through the door immediately. So look at Everton, they've sort of done quite a bit of business already. You know, that's how I assumed we were going to attack this window.
Exactly. I mean, like, Tosin was pretty much our player, but we didn't pay the 10 million up front.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Everton are interested in what, the first week of Jan, and by the second week of Jan, is an Everton player? I mean,
totally. And Dale, you're a sort of big fan of American sports.
Yeah.
What's your sort of viewpoint on it? I know you sort of you've mentioned before about sort of transfer policies over there.
Yeah, so I think it's just an interesting one to consider the suppose, the impact that the American owners, part owners, have on the club. So in America, you don't have transfers as such. You get people in and out of contract and you pay them. Essentially, they have different levels of paying. So I just wonder if, are they looking at doing things potentially on the cheap? Because, you know, you get someone who's a prospect and you know that 3 or 4 years down the line, they're going to grow into being an amazing player. So if we look at the 76ers, who Harris and Blitzer own, Joel Embiid is their star player. He's been on the books for 4 or 5 years. He's on low contract. And as he gets better, as they know he will do, he's now on the max contract. And they're prepared to splash the cash once they know someone's good. So I wonder if, you know, part of it could be, are we looking around on the cheap? But then if there is someone who's good, will they then pay the big bucks? You know, so if Babacar, for example, comes along, he's not going to be a 30 grand a week player. So hopefully they all dip their hands in their pockets because they see that's the player we need. So, yeah. I don't know. Let's see. It is an interesting one though, isn't it?
Exactly. It really is. And like Mark, do you think, like Hodgson said, we need sort of 6 or 7 players. Do you think we need that many? Have you sort of been impressed by the way some of the sort of second string have stepped up so far?
I'm not sure we need 6 or 7. Probably 3 or 4 quality players would cover the spread. I've been pretty impressed with some bench guys stepping up since we've been hit with some injuries. Obviously, we had Soare out long-term as well, who's sort of just back, and a lot of people want him sold. I'd like to give him a bit of time myself. I rated him before he had that nasty accident. And so forth. Obviously, a keeper's got to come in. 6 or 7, yeah, I think might be a bit heavy, but, I mean, yeah, Todd, you know, just to know a bit what you guys said, you had a couple of same names popping up again, and you think, well, why is it no closer to be getting done than even last time? And I think when we got Mamadou in, that was literally a last hour thing as well, yeah. From memory. So it begs the question of why these things are being done so late, and if they are having chats or things are serious, why it's not relayed as that a bit more clear, because it comes across as Duggan that's doing almost nothing really.
Yeah, it's a bit shambolic. I mean, we must be best mates with Babacar's agent the time we've spent talking to that guy for about 3 years now.
It worries me as well, though, because, you know, we leave it to the 11th hour, like we did with Nias. It falls over, and you have no room to then go, right, who's our number two target? Let's try and get them in.
Yeah, exactly. It was a bit of a disaster, that last window. I really thought they'd rectify that this time, but no. Okay, cool. Well, that's enough about transfers. I guess we'll just end this part here, and we'll come back for part two, discuss the Burnley game, which we watched last night, and review all the other games that's happened over the Christmas period. Hello, welcome back to Exiled Eagles. So last night we played Burnley. Impressive, slightly frustrating 1-0 victory. Dale, what do you make of the game?
First half, really good. I think probably one of the best halves of football we put together outside the first half of Leicester. And I honestly thought that we should have put it away. At half time, you thought we should have been 2-0 up, 2-3-0 up easily. Good chance of Benteke. I know what he tried to do by guiding it in, but a bit more conviction. That's a guy who's short of confidence. You can see it in what he was trying to do, but he had a good game. Sacco obviously scored the goal, which was brilliant. That's a guy, complete opposite of Benteke. He is full of confidence, and he, give him a sniff, he's having a go. His volley that whizzed past the far post. I mean, Ian Dowie said on commentary, if that hit someone in the crowd, they probably would have their head knocked off or something along those lines. He caught that so well. First half, brilliant. Second half, you felt we were hanging on a little bit in patches. But the reality is, Wayne Hennessy had one save to make in the first half. He came and claimed just about every single ball, bar one, really, really well. And
yeah, big shout out to Wayne Hennessy, actually. He dominated the aerial.
Everything he usually doesn't do so well, he did very, very well. And we had a chance, Benteke could have scored at the end. Again, it's a guy who's short on confidence, one touch too many.
Mark, were you happy with what you saw?
Yes, mate, I didn't catch all the game. I was up Sunshine Coast, but I saw the highlights. And yeah, probably a game in two halves. First one was outstanding, and from what I can gather, unlucky not to be several goals up at halftime. Saka stepping up again and doing the business for us and just on fire lately, which is good. I've always rated him.
Is he any good, though?
Sorry, boss?
Is he good? Is he good, Sacco? I can't work it out.
I think so. I've always rated him. I was happy when we got him from Wolves, I believe, a couple of seasons ago. Got a monster left boot on him, and the one that he scored in the cup, actually, against Brighton. I saw an identical goal when I was up in Hong Kong earlier in the year that he did off his left, probably from even further out. And I was wowed by that, and I've kind of always rated him. Never really got into bat for him, so I probably didn't rate him that much. But yeah, just lately, mate, he's kind of scoring for fun and certainly keeping the ship afloat and going in the right direction. And you know, probably a good offset whilst Benteke is still sort of scratching around and trying to get his shit together.
Thank God.
You know, it's kind of funny in the City game and stuff, and I don't know how other clubs have the same thing, but you know, you like you win and then you're not happy. You only won 1-0, but you got the 3 points, and then you know, even City missed a penalty prior. You know, you say we'll give you a point. You take it all day long, so it's like never seem to be content.
That's true.
But such is the life of Palace. But yeah, thought we did well, mate. Yeah, you know, they rolled us our last six occasions in top flight, so it's nice to. To get one on them, and you know they're going all right. They're sniffing right behind the top six. So to have them like we did, yeah, it's happy and impressed.
Yeah, for sure. I just want to make a quick point on Saka though. Do you reckon when he's got the ball, he's got a tune going on in his head? He just like that, and he just kind of runs around. And is like, oh bloody hell, I've got the ball, and he's like, I'm just gonna kick this. I'm gonna kick this as hard as I can now, and then he just does it. I reckon that's what he does.
I'm so glad for him.
Oh, yeah, it's class.
When he started, when he came to the club, you know, it was a free transfer from Wolves, and he scored, I think, two in two games, his first two games against Tottenham. I can't remember.
Villa and Chelsea.
There you go. And I remember saying to somebody, this is the guy, get him in your fantasy team, he's going to score goals. And he's been beset by injury, beset by the fact we haven't been great, so he hasn't had a chance and that sort of thing. And now he looks fit. He, you know, he's a big lad, but he's still quick. He looks fit. There's one incident where in a couple of games ago, somebody just tried to go shoulder to shoulder with him and went flying.
Yeah, you're not going to shoulder him off the ball.
That's what he brings to us now. And he's like Wilf. He has an air of unpredictability to him, which I think sets him. It means, though, when you've got that player, he doesn't know what he's going to do. Your position have no chance of figuring it out. So
yeah,
it's good for us to have that extra option.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's like I was saying, he's absolutely sorted us out when we really needed him to. So, yes, been an absolute godsend. So, we haven't podded for quite a while. A lot sort of gone on since we last did a pod. I can't even remember what the last game was that we talked about.
Spurs.
But we certainly haven't done one. Spurs. Right, okay, so it's just as we were starting to get our stuff together.
Yeah.
So rather than sort of discuss all the games that have happened in the past, I thought we'd do a little sort of review system. So out of 10, I want you guys to review how we've been doing. So, for example, 1 being useless, 10 being the next England manager. How has Roy gone in the last few months? Rob, what do you reckon?
Oh, I mean, you can't give him 10, can you? Because then he'll be like, bugger that, I'm not doing that.
He doesn't want it.
Give me a 9.5. Like, I mean, you can't. I don't think he's put a foot wrong. I really don't. I mean, we're picking up points against teams that we should be picking up points against, and we're beating those teams, which we never used to do. Like, the Palace way, as everyone said, it's like, lose 4-0 at home to Sunderland, go to Chelsea and win 4-1. That's what Palace do to stay up on the last day of the season. But it's not that now. We're beating Burnley at home. We're beating Southampton away. Well, okay, we drew with Swansea, but I didn't think we were going to concede then either. Just took a wonder shot from 35 yards or whatever. You've got players like Martin Kelly playing fantastic. Look what he's done to Bakary Sakho. That's all. That's man management. That's 100% man management. Sakho's walking around with a diddly 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 in his head. He's like, Jesus Christ, I've beaten a man. What do I do next? And they're like, honestly, you see when he beats a man, you just see his eyes go massive. He's like, well, I don't know what I've done there. And you know, like when you're really pissed and you think, what did I do last night? And how did I get home? It's kind of like that every time he's got the ball. But,
I hope Bakary doesn't tune into this.
No disrespect, Bakary.
I love you, Bakary.
I do. I mean, you should see me play football. Jesus. I think the point was, I looked at so we're on what, 25 points now. If he's not that it would obviously happen like this, but if we'd had him at the start of the season with the same amount of points as we've got now, we'd be on 36 points, which would have us seventh. If we scored the two last minute penalties, we'd be sixth, a point or even above Arsenal. That's the impact he's had.
I don't know about you, but every time I look at the table, I do that mental arithmetic about those two penalties. I can't do it. I can't just look at it normally. I'm always like, oh, we could be ninth.
Jesus, we'll be Champions League.
Yeah, totally. Okay, on to the next one. Mark. Okay, so out of 10 again, 1 being rubbish, 10 being team of the 80s. How have our performances been in the last couple of months?
Last couple of months have been great, which has been pretty much since we spoke last. I think the performances have been great, picking up points along the way, certainly against teams we wouldn't have been touted as picking up points from. Certainly, well, not previously, and certainly not with the start we had at the start of the season. So it's nice to be racking them up along the way. Dale, it wasn't that long ago, I think you wrote something, we needed 1.68 points per game to get to 40 to stay up. That's now down to one flat.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that would be the case after the 23rd match that we had for the season. So, I mean, that's, you look at that stat for survival, very, very gettable for the boys, particularly with their current form. 9.5 from me.
Oh, very happy, very happy. All right, Dale, out of 10, how's Wolf done the last couple of months?
You guys have come to me because you have this thing about me hating Wolf.
You do, you hate him. You hate him.
It's only because you hate him. That's why we've got to think about it.
Wolf, in my eyes, is our second best player. I love Wolf. I think he's brilliant. No, I think out of 10, I will give Wolf an 8.5, 9. And my big thing with Wolf, everyone knows that sometimes the crowd gets to him, the situation gets to him. So if we take the Watford game in the first half, he was getting jeered by the Watford crowd. They're taking a mick out of him for a supposed dive when we played him before. And he is playing up to it. He was being a bit petulant. And then I think at halftime, Hodgson got into him and said, mate, just be Wilf Sahar. Play the ball. Play your game. And he was unbelievable second half, untouchable, and won us the game. He's dragged us through games on his own. He literally has been that good. He has gone from being a kid with some potential to be a good winger or footballer or whatever, to now being, in my opinion, one of the best attacking threats in the Premier League. And how, when you see all this nonsense on Facebook or talking about best players in the league, how they cannot put him in those conversations, I have no idea, because what he gives to our club, any team in the bottom half of the table would take a Wilfred Zaha.
Sure.
I'd agree with you. So you don't hate Wilf?
I don't hate Wilf.
Hashtag hate Wilf.
All right. All right, Rob, out of 10, what are you giving Ben Cheke?
That's it. Wow. I'm going to give him a 7. The only thing he hasn't done is really score. I think he's pivotal to how we play. And I think, as I said, like when at the Arsenal game, I think some of the stick he's getting is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you try and play. We played Arsenal, we played City, we played Southampton within the space of 6 days. Now, I ask anyone that's criticising him in the stands to play those type of games, especially Arsenal and City, in 2 days within each other. Now, if I run from here to my bedroom and back, I have to sit down for a good half an hour and I have to walk the rest of it, right? And these guys are then going to have him to play football and play games like that. He was clearly told not to shut down people against Arsenal, because he looked what he did against City and he was all over them. He was like a rash.
Yeah.
So he was doing what he was told to do. The Southampton game. Jimmy Mack doesn't score and Benteke is playing. His header was perfect. He got up there. He didn't power the header. He just let it hit his head and it looped to Jimmy Mack. Goal. He's a big boy. His confidence is shot in front of goal at the moment. We've spoken about it. Everyone's spoken about that. But if he wasn't playing, if we didn't have that focal point up front, then I think we'd be a very different proposition and I think we'd be not as good a team. Like, Sacco did well against Brighton, but he doesn't hold the ball up like Benteke does.
He's not a striker.
Yeah.
He's not a striker. And it's like when people's, like, we had this conversation on WhatsApp, and it's like, if we'd had a non-goalkeeper in goal, they will make lots of mistakes because they don't know what they're doing. It's like,
we've got one, haven't we?
If we have a non-striker up front who doesn't know where to make the runs, how to hold the ball up, we are a different proposition. So I think Rob's 100% spot on.
Okay. Marky Mark, Luca.
Oh. Luca, yeah, I think he's going well. Very happy for him to get the captain's armband, which is probably deserved. Met him, when I was at the pre-season tournament up in Hong Kong. Good lad, scored a great goal up there. Probably don't blame him too much for getting the jitters with the City penalty.
The reactions were very different, weren't they, to Benteke missing the penalty and Luka missing the penalty?
Yeah, should have given it to Christian to bang in. And it was his worst one of the season. He'd been absolutely creaming them. And he just looks solid, not making many mistakes. Doing his bit.
Bale, out of 10, probably my favourite player of this last couple of months. Tompkins, what do you reckon of him?
I am going to give him a solid 9.99. I mean,
I think that's fair.
The guy has been absolutely phenomenal. And when I am seeing the likes of Virgil van Dijk move for £75 million and they're talking about Harry Maguire for £30 million to City.
£50 million, mate.
£50 million, sorry, to City. 50. I happily say Tompkins is as good as him. I mean, the guy has been an absolute rock. Whether he's played alongside Scott Dan, Mamadou Sakho, Martin Kelly, and Delaney, and Fosu Mensah, he's had five different centre back partners. And do you know what? He looks like he wants it. He looks like he's been a Palace boy through and through, which obviously he's not. He looks like he wants it, and do you know what? We'll give him a 10. We'll give him a bonus 0.01 for those sideburns.
What is going on with that facial hair? Is it a beard? Is it sideburns? I can't work it out.
He's been brilliant. And difficult one. Obviously, Dan's now out for the season. So that's sad. Sorry to hear that for Scott. But does that mean next year, who do you have? You've got Mamadou, you've got Scott Dan, you've got James Tompkins. What do you do?
Yeah, very, very good question. Tompkins makes either partner look decent, so it's a nice position to be in.
Yeah.
He was class. He was class. I was at Arsenal, and he was class. I mean, he just reads everything. He doesn't have to go to ground. One of those guys. Yeah.
Absolutely. He doesn't have to get caught out of a pace either, because he's in the right place at the right time.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay, so out of 10, Rob, what are you giving the British press at the moment? In particular, their treatment of Wilfred Zaha.
Oh, gee, I'm going to give him a minus 367. It's unbelievable. it's a witch hunt. It's an absolute witch hunt. And I know we're going to be, but everyone, like, if other fans listen to this podcast, and they'll be like, one reason why they listen to this podcast. The second thing is, like, oh, they're just Palace fans saying it. But it's a witch hunt. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. I mean, the penalty against City was a penalty. End of. And all the City fans said it wasn't. Look at the penalty Raheem Sterling got against Arsenal and tell me the difference. There's none. There's absolutely none. Like,
if that tackle on Zaha from Sterling happens in the centre circle, it's a free kick.
I know.
So Yep. It doesn't matter if it's in the 18-yard box.
It's a penalty.
It's still a foul, therefore it's a penalty.
For sure. And my... I mean, two things I want to bring up as well. One, when he stays on his feet against Southampton, no one says anything there when it's a penalty, when he should have gone down for a penalty. And yesterday, when the scramble in the box, is not what happened, but the ball goes loose and he gets there just before Pope gets there. And he eventually runs it out of play, just runs it out of play. But he could go down there. He could go down there. And I guarantee you, Hazard goes down there. I guarantee you, they go down, and everyone's always clever there. He's won a penalty, you know. It wasn't going anywhere. The ball was going to go out of play, but he's earned the contact. Vardy, who you name it. Wolf stays on his feet, runs the ball out, but no one's going to say anything about that. No one's going to say anything about that. And so because of all this witch hunt now, we're not getting penalties we should have. That Sacco's was a penalty yesterday, for sure. Yeah. But I guarantee you now, I guarantee you, if Wolf had chosen to play for England, this wouldn't be happening. Not at all.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
He's like, look at the media darling, Dele Alli. Media darling. Plays for England. He's England's one of England's better midfielders. He can do whatever he wants. He could literally kick someone in the nuts and they'd be like, oh, you know, it's Dele Alli,
well,
right?
He did.
I was going to say, he does that pretty much every week, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, and then Harry Kane, shocking tackle against Man City. He just gets brushed on the target. He's the best, England's best player. 1,000 goals a year. You know, he's an England captain. Can't say anything. Wilf's now playing for the Ivory Coast. He's no longer eligible for England. Therefore, he's a dud. I mean, Jesse Lingard, I bet you damn right, I bet you anything, they will never ever pick up on Jesse Lingard because he's an England player. Chris Sutton can do one. I mean, Jesus Christ. He's so vocal on whenever Wilf, like, he's going to get a ban. And then, you know, Wilshere dives the next night and he doesn't even tweet. You're like, you're a knob. Just do one. Stop trying to stay relevant and be controversial because that's what people think you're paid to do. Just say what you're thinking, knobhead. Rant over.
The problem is, I think the problem is now, though, is that Wilf has a reputation. Rightly or wrongly,
sure,
he now has a reputation. He's won the most penalties this season, right, of any player. And I think that we may start to see that dry up now because referees are going to say he dived. They're in their head.
It's already happening. He's not getting anything, is he?
So we've got to be careful now. I think for his own sake, the problem is he's going to stay on his feet. We're going to miss out on opportunities, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But we can't score a penalty anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Very good point. Okay, let's just wrap up this part there. Coming up next, when Rob was in the UK, he had a chat with our good mate James Howland, author of The Palace Addiction 1 and 2. Let's see what James had to say.
Hello, welcome to Exile Eagles podcast. I'm walking down towards Selhurst Park on a bitterly cold December night. It's my first appearance at Selhurst in 10 years. And I'm walking with James Howland of the Palace Addiction 1 and 2. James, thank you for joining me.
Hello.
So James, now, if for everyone that hasn't read the book, what is it? What are they about?
So the first one is set in 2009-10, and it's all about the admin season. And I pledged at the start of that year I was going to go to every game. And it's just stories of basically getting drunk up and down the country, meeting Palace fans, going to games, missing weddings, turning up at Palace Plymouth, that kind of fixture, and basically making mundane fixtures exciting to what 19-year-old I was at the time. As the year went on, obviously the club went into administration, and what I try and do in the book is unpick quite why we obsess over our wonderfully shit club quite so much. The second one, I lived in Oz for a year, met the fantastic guys who run this podcast, and basically talk about how Palace made me feel at home on the other side of the world, and having a cult at 2 a.m. was sort of a strange way of feeling at home.
I think I speak for every Palace fan saying, who hasn't missed a family wedding to go to see Plymouth Palace at Plymouth? So we've all been there, we've all done it, we know what you're talking about. Speaking, I remember you coming out in Australia. It was great to have another one. You're now an honorary CPFC Sydney member. But obviously you go home and away. You went home and away and have been going for a number of years. What's the obviously, apart from not being at the ground, what's the biggest difference you see in supporters at the ground and the guys like us watching it in a pub?
To be honest, in terms of being an actual supporter, I don't see any difference. If anything, I think being out there, it's more of a commitment to turn up at 2 in the morning, watch a game, and then sort of, you know, by the time the game finishes, it's 4 a.m. So if you fancy a post-match pint to talk about it, you're suddenly talking, you're halfway through your Sunday. But it's a really strange thing. When I first moved out to Oz, I didn't know anyone. I gave up a good job, good life, good flat, to go out to Oz just because I thought, why not? Got nothing else on in the mid-20s. Yeah. And when I got there, I realised I don't know anyone. I'm working in a really rough Irish bar. Scruffy Murphy's, you got to visit it, guys. It's an experience. And just suddenly, when, as soon as I went, we actually played West Ham, and we lost 3-1 to West Ham. Was my first experience of the Sydney Supporters Club. And what I didn't realise when I turned up, I'd watched the previous week, we'd lost to Arsenal, to FEMA Palace losing here. And I'd watched it on my own. And then the West Ham game, I was like, I must find this. Allegedly, there's this supporters group. And I phoned up the pub and said, look, are you going to show the Palace game? I'd heard there might be some Palace fans off of BBS. And we shared a pub with West Ham at the time, the Royal Exhibition Hotel. And there was about 30 Palace fans turned up just because we were playing West Ham, who we knew would also bring a similar amount of fans. And it was just the most incredible experience, that from having week or 2 weeks barely knowing anyone, trying to make new friendships, suddenly having this whole experience of sharing chat about Palace. And we'd had the same experience from different hemispheres. And when you think of your closest friends, what do? You meet up, you talk about when you're at uni together or when you're at school together, and you talk about these sort of experiences you've shared. And immediately I had that with fellow Palace fans. So it was just incredible to have that. And it was definitely the sort of Palace element that helped me settle in Oz. And really sort of a connection that we all had and we all shared. It was just so many incredible experiences in that pub.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, that's exactly kind of every individual Palace fan at CPFC Sydney's experience. Like, we've all come out on our own at some, or with a wife or whatever, and then we've gone to the pub, we've met fellow people that have sat through awfulness at 2 a.m, but we sat through it together. So it's as you say, it's a commitment. And people that haven't done it yet, I definitely recommend you do it. Now, so the Palace Addiction too, you travel around Asia as well. How was that trying to get to see all the games in Asia?
So that was quite an experience. I think I saw 4 or 5 games out there. So I had to pay a £20, which in Asia is basically making you a millionaire, deposit at the bar to see us draw 1-1 with Stoke. I had to watch the second half after being kicked out of a closing bar of a game, 1-0 loss to Aston Villa. Watch the second half in a brothel. honestly, there was no happy ending. We lost 1-0 to Benteke. What other games did I see? I saw us draw with Spurs 0-0 in a bar in Phuket with a sort of very confused Dutch guy and Belgium guy who were looking at me sort of, why are you watching this? What is this team? And then I thought I was being rewarded in Vietnam. I saw an early kickoff against Man City. I was like, finally, 7 o'clock in the evening, perfect time. Can watch Palace, go for a night out. We lost 3-0, so... But yeah, it was quite an experience. But also, whenever you're in Asia, obviously anyone there is trying to sell you stuff. And the general question is, are you English? You've got money. But what they say rather than that is, are you English? Who you support? And then I would say, Crystal Palace. And they go, Liverpool! You fucked Liverpool! And it was just after the 3-3 game. And we were worldwide famous for stuffing up Liverpool's title challenge. Or the odd Chelsea fan who went, John Terry?
Now, obviously you've had a different experience than myself. So I've been out in Sydney for 7 years now. And it's strange that being in Sydney, I feel closest to Palace. I feel like I have to watch the games. Like, I have to be part of the club because I'm not here. Now, so for someone like yourself that went home and away, written books, you mean you're at protests. I mean, Palace, you bleed, you literally do bleed red and blue. Did you feel the same connection being all the way over there, or did it change for you?
No, I felt very much the same connection. I think one thing I've reflected on recently that I hadn't really appreciated is thinking about, I worked six, 7 days often to sort of save money up there, working in bars, kind of. And the weekend was still the weekend because I would prioritise being able to watch Palace.
Yeah.
And I realised very early on, when I missed a few games, it really took something away from my life and took something away when I couldn't actually watch the Palace games. And to being able to just meet up with my mates, watch the game, just made, even if I was working on the Saturday, working till 1 a.m, being picked up at the Opera House by some of the lads and then taken up to the Palace Hotel, watching the game, it just made it feel like Palace. It just felt, didn't, it meant I wasn't homesick in the slightest, because it was that touch of home. It was the most important thing from being home, was you had your Palace family. Yeah. And, you know, it just gave that closeness to England, gave that closeness to, you know, I would literally build my shifts, build my work around watching Palace, because it just gave me that sense of home. It made me feel like I was there. So it, I did not feel I missed, you know, there were some great games that year. So we had the Liverpool one, home and away, Yedi free kick, and then the one where we absolutely destroyed them in Gerrard's last game at Anfield. We had the City game where we beat them. We had, I think, some other games, but under Pardew, obviously, we're on that awesome run. Ironically, there's only one game I regret missing, which was Dover away, because I don't think I'll get a chance to go there again. It probably says how sad and geeky I am, but I didn't miss Palace because we could watch them. I think I'd struggle when we're in the Championship, and it was interesting chatting to Nick, one of the other guys in the group, and he was saying, you know, if Palace were on telly, it'd be like 4 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Yeah,
we'd be playing Birmingham, but it's the only, you know, we'd get a game once every 3 or 4 months.
Yep.
And because it was so rare, he kind of was saying everyone made a big effort and everyone was there. Whereas when I was there, as we're in the Premier League, everyone would take it for granted, you know. There'd be weeks where perhaps 2 or 3 of us would show up.
Yep.
Because, you know, there are other things to do, apparently.
Yeah, and he's 100% right. Like, for people that don't know, every single Premier League game is on live in Australia. So any 3 o'clock kickoff, it doesn't have to be like the main game. So your massive games like your Palace, West Broms, Burnley, Southamptons, they're all played live. So it is very easy. But in the Championship, you'll probably get one game a week. And if you're the game, then you have to go watch it. Now, James, I've got 1,000 questions to ask you, but my arm hurts and it's freezing and I haven't got gloves on. So I'm probably going to just do a couple more. So obviously you met up with us. Did you manage to meet up with any other CPFC? Because I know there's Hong Kong Eagles, there's a couple of others around Asia. Did you manage to meet up with them, or did you know about them, or how did that go?
I tried to meet up with the Hong Kong guys, but it didn't work out. It was out of the season when I was there. I bumped into someone else. I think it was Thailand. There happened to be another Palace fan in the bar, which was quite an experience. I met a Palace fan off the top of the Tongariro Crossing, which, better known as Mount Doom in from Lord of the Rings in New Zealand. A guy called Mark, so I had some good travels with him. But no, I mean, what I found incredible though is at the time, Western Sydney Wanderers, who I adopted as my team, it's the best team in Australia, they were managed by Tony Popovich. Yeah. And because of Popper, and because of Mele being so popular at the time and being Palace captain, and it was incredible how much like love there was from Aussies towards Palace.
Yep,
and disproportionately so. So obviously the main teams were your Barcelonas, your Real Madrids, your Manchester United, Chelsea, Arsenal, whatever. And then out the rest of them, Palace were probably best of the rest as far as Australians were concerned, just because we had these two quite strong links. Actually, I think so we've had something like 4 or 5 players who captained Australia, I think.
Yeah.
Popovich.
Yedi.
And obviously Carl Viet, you know, the big ones. Craig Foster.
Hero.
But yeah, no, it was really was incredible, like the love Palace had. And I think I didn't live through the journey you probably have when you moved out there, saying, oh, I support Crystal Palace. Who? To then people going, I support Crystal Palace, and them laughing.
Yep.
And to then now people going, I support Crystal Palace, going, oh, okay, yeah, fair enough, that's vaguely normal.
It's very, very much that. So it was very much, I support Palace, and everyone, it's like I suppose when you don't live in South London, if you live in North London, support Palace, they're like, oh, I like Palace. No, we're not offensive to anyone apart from Brighton fans, but we're everyone's second
and
team.
Who cares what they think?
Exactly. And but as soon as Jedi came on the scene, They're like, oh, yeah, you got Jedinak, haven't you? And then, yeah, every news bulletin Sunday morning, it'd be, yeah, your big teams, and they talk about Palace. So, Joseph, I'm just going to wrap it up here now because, yeah, my fingers are about to drop off. I'm an Aussie now. Like, anything that drops below 17 degrees and I have to wrap up warm. So,
can I give a last message for Rob? He's got to remember not to shout, come on, you Glaziers, as it was last time he was at Selhurst, I think.
1983, I think it was. Thanks, guys. Oh, the literature can't feel my hand. Ah! I know, he's awful.
Okay, that was Rob there speaking to James Howland, or Stato as we know him around here. If you haven't read the Palace Addiction books, I highly, highly recommend them. They're really good. It's actually quite weird reading those books, especially the second one based in Sydney. I've never read a book where I know I'm going to be in it and I'm waiting for myself to appear and I'm like halfway through going, I'm coming up soon, I'm going to be in it in a minute. It's an odd experience. Okay, I guess we can wrap it up there. All right, gents, thanks very much for joining me. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find us on Facebook, just search for Exiled Eagles, or Twitter and Instagram, CPFC_Sid. All right, we'll catch you next time. Cheers.